Rose Oswald Poles started on June 1 as president of the Wisconsin Bankers Association. So it's time for a newsmaker profile with you. Thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Well, we were just talking, and there's only two women that you know of that head major Wisconsin trade associations, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Do you consider yourself a bit of a pioneer for your gender?
I didn't until I started looking around and realizing that there were not many women who are heading up local trade associations, and even nationally, I'm one of five State Banker Association women who head up their respective states associations. So I do feel honored and hope to set a good example for everyone else.
What is that about that glass ceiling that so very few professional women like you have broken it?
You know, it's unusual for women to stay in the workforce for as long as I have. It was 20 years in May. Mm-hmm. And so I just think, you know, hard work and determination and the opportunity that presents itself, which it did here, all work together to make it happen.
So have you been working with the WBA for all of the 20 years?
I have, yes.
Starting as what?
Starting as a part-time intern for 2 years while I was in law school here in Madison, and then got the position full-time, thankfully, during my third year of law school, so I didn't have to do too much serious job hunting at the time, and have been here ever since, and that was May 1993 that I started full-time.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. Want to talk about banking, Wisconsin banking?
I would love to, yes.
What are the biggest changes in Wisconsin banking over the last 3 or 4 years? What changes were a result of the Great Recession?
I think almost all of the changes affecting our industry over the last 3 years can be tied to the economic downturn and the recession, for sure. Our industry certainly is a lagging indicator compared to other indicators when you're looking at the economy overall. So you're just now starting to slowly see an upturn in the number of profitable banks in the state. But we are a reflection of our customers. I mean, that is what we do. We take in their deposits to help them invest and save for the future, and then we loan them money at favorable rates to, you know, achieve whatever dreams that they have that they'd like to realize. So if our customers are hurting and are having difficulty paying loans, then over time, eventually, that's going to be realized on our books as well.
Now, how many members in the WBA?
We have 272 members, about 98% of the industry.
With assets of what?
Oh, anywhere from $25 million, the smallest bank, all the way up to, you know, Associated U.S. Bank with the largest institutions, the regional guys as well.
And our banks are making money again?
We are. We are. If you look at the first quarter data, which just came out a few weeks ago from the FDIC, 7 out of 8 banks are profitable. That is a very small but slight uptick compared to the prior quarter, which was 4 out of 5. So we're slowly, slowly seeing improvement.
What are the profit centers now? Are they home loans? Are they second loans on homes? Or are they debit cards? Because I read so much nationally about things like swipe fees. So what are the sources of profits for Wisconsin Bank?
Certainly lending is still a profit source for us. You know, even though lending is down, we are still open for business and we continue to make loans every day. Home mortgage rates are still very favorable, whether you're going to buy a home for the first time or refinancing. So during the last year or two, we've seen strong periods of refinancing activity, and that's all been very profitable for financial institutions. You know, people think with the recent debate over interchange fees that the around debit cards that's a giant profit center for us.
And I was gonna ask you.
You know, on some level, it really is not. We have a lot of fraud activity, unfortunately, that the financial institutions bear the burden on. The consumer doesn't, and the merchant doesn't. So that is a huge offsetting expense to any income we might see on those debit card swipe fees. So, you know, our basic bread and butter way of making money from, you know, some prudent investing that we have to do of our own capital reserves and getting the interest back on that and earnings that way to the lending activity is still primarily how we make money.
Well, are Wisconsin banks making a lot more loans than they were, say, over the period of 08 to 10, which is kind of the heart of the recession?
You know, I haven't specifically studied that time frame. However, lending actually from, again, the first quarter of 2011 to the last quarter of 2010 actually went down by 8%. I would say 08 to 10 was still a fairly strong period of making loans, especially early on in that time frame. But right now it is down slightly, but again, not to the extreme that it's halted. We certainly are open for business.
How interwoven is the banking industry in Wisconsin and the housing industry? Because you and I have all seen the tables. The housing industry hasn't bounced back.
Right. No, housing has really not bounced back at all, and we're certainly seeing that. You know, the building industry is wishing that we would make more loans, but we're under certainly very tight regulatory scrutiny and need to make prudent loans when we make them, and they're not always the best credit in a global sense. I mean, certainly there are pockets of construction going on around the state, and we're there to finance that development, but it's not happening at the pace that everybody's certainly used to seeing going back 5 to 6 years ago. So, you know, very tied to that. We're also certainly tied to the commercial real estate industry as well, and that is seeing still struggles in that regard.
There's been a lot of talk nationally. You watch all the economic indicators. Do you think we're in for a double dip recession?
I am concerned about a double dip recession for sure. I'm certainly not an economist, so I haven't studied things as intently as someone with that title would, but I am certainly very concerned. I know the markets are certainly reacting in a nervous manner over the last week, so I think there is some concern that it's going to dip back down, whether it goes into a full-blown recession again. Hard to say.
Do you think our consumers in the state of Wisconsin are able to know that your members are not the Citicorps and the Bank of America and the large national banks?
You know, unfortunately, I think the community banks in Wisconsin are painted with the broad brush that we're just the big, bad, ugly, greedy bankster,
just like
we
the Citicorps and Bank
to,
of America,
that are no different than those two, or Goldman Sachs. You know, it's a little too easy in the media for some general reporters to call all of us banks when they really are meaning investment banks. And so I think there's still some work that needs to be done in terms of getting the general public in Wisconsin to understand that no matter what the name is on the front of a bank building in this state, these are people that are your friends, your neighbors, your family in some instances, who go to work every day with nothing else in mind other than helping out you and making sure you get to a financially better place. So that is unfortunate, but I think some of that negative reaction towards
the
banking industry.
So you're tarred with the same brush.
We're painted with the same brush.
How many employees work in Wisconsin banks?
The last count was over 28,000 employees, so it's a significant industry for sure and a big employer in the state. And especially when a more small rural community, you know, loses some of the branch offices that might be there, it will hurt the community.
Now, it seems like often on every Friday, the federal government announces some banks that have to be taken over.
Mm-hmm.
How many have been taken over in Wisconsin in the last few years? And our numbers are nowhere near as high as in other states, correct?
Correct. We are by far a night and day different compared to our neighbors of Minnesota and Illinois in particular, and certainly different than Georgia and California and the state of Washington, Florida, states like that, where you saw giant swings in a real estate bubble compared to what you saw in our economy here. Right. Since 2008, we have only had 6 failures in this state. And even then, every single one of those had an acquirer. So the location was purchased by a new existing financial institution, and those customers continued to be serviced and saw no disruption.
Is there any way that the average Wisconsin bank has changed now vis-a-vis 5 years prior to the economic downturn? The most common ways they've changed, excuse me.
You know, without question, we have huge compliance costs now, which isn't something the public would necessarily see, but we have much greater...
The public's paying for those, aren't they?
The public, I suppose you could arguably say that they are paying for them. Without question, our regulatory burden has increased, and we are certainly under much greater regulatory scrutiny than we ever were. If you can say the pendulum swung too far to being too liberal in terms of regulatory scrutiny, it is now completely swung the other way, and many of our members feel it's an overburden. Considering the environment we're in, the economy in this state, the fact that we do have pretty stable economic numbers here, even though we're seeing some swings. Again, it's not the degree or the percent you see in some of the coastal states. So without question, the implementation of Dodd-Frank last year in July, and we're coming up to the one-year anniversary of that, is very painful already for our members, and we're only still waiting to see how much pain at the end of the day it's going to mean, because it was a bill that was almost 2,400 pages in length that over time will result in over 5,000 pages of regulations. So we're only starting to see that regulatory proposals develop, so the full impact is still yet to be unknown. But
what's the worst case under Dodd-Frank? What are your members really afraid of?
Well, the first thing they've been concerned about is the interchange fee provision, because that is targeted to banks $10 billion and greater in size. So on paper, it exempts community banks, but the marketplace is, of course, going to drive every bank to pay whatever the cap is that the Federal Reserve's proposal, once it's finally out, which it is not yet, whatever that cap looks like, that's going to be what we're forced to get in terms of income. But yet again, there's really no consideration for the fraud expenses and the cost side of that particular service. So that was certainly one huge one, just the cost of regular compliance with the consumer laws. We just went through a significant change in documentation for a change in the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act 18 months ago. The new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, which will be taking over the rule writing of all of the consumer regulations and then whatever new rules they may develop over time. They are charged with, a year from now, changing both Truth in Lending and RESPA, so those disclosures get into a more combined fashion. And as a result, that's going to be yet another overhaul of a system we just did 18 months ago. So, you know, the constant change to existing rules for seemingly more politically motivated reasons than substantive ones is just adding unnecessary expense to all of us. So those are two certainly significant ones. And then capital levels are being studied as part of the rule. There are no definitive percentages set forth yet, but you know the future there is concerning.
How much capital each and every bank would have
would
to have?
Would have to have, correct.
They're also, I know just enough to be dangerous as to ask this question, but they're talking about abolishing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. How would that shake out in terms of your members?
Well, I think the future actually of housing lending generally is very uncertain because of a lot of very conflicting rules. The GSE reform you mentioned is one of those. Some of the proposals, and there's several floating around Congress right now, some of them would actually completely abolish the GSEs. Well, what the general public doesn't understand is if you want and like that 30-year fixed rate mortgage, we need a secondary market to sell it to, because a bank is not going to make money holding that cost for 30 years. We just don't. So we need to sell it off to private investors if that market would exist in a larger sense than it does today, or to, you know, the quasi-private entities like a Fannie and Freddie. So our industry definitely realizes that the GSEs got too big, but we're not in the camp of wanting to see them disappear entirely. I think they need to be perhaps ratcheted back a little bit and then more prudently regulated themselves so that they do what they were designed to do, which is, you know, be the buyer of prudent 30-year fixed rate, 15-year fixed rate mortgage loans.
Now, you mentioned the interchange fee. Was this what I followed in Washington last night, the debate over the swipe fee?
Yeah, right.
Is that the same thing?
It is the same thing. Debit card, swipe fee, interchange fee, all interchangeable terms.
And the fight seems to be somebody wants, is a swipe fee now 44 cents? And the feds are talking about
12 cents.
Maximizing 12 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a difference of, 32 cents?
Mm-hmm.
What would be the impact of that 32-cent change on your members?
Well, certainly those who are receiving that income to a large extent, and, you know, our members have varying debit card portfolios, so it affects each of them a little differently. But that certainly is a reduction in that income. And as I mentioned, there's really no corresponding reduction in the costs, which include the fraud costs.
So some of your members would notice that 32-cent decrease a great deal.
Yes, a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How has Wisconsin fared in terms of underwater mortgages, where you have mortgages because of the drop in home values, the homes are not worth the amount of the mortgages, mm-hmm. excuse me.
Right. Well, you're certainly still seeing a large number of home sales today that are being done as short sales, which essentially means that the debt on the home is greater than what the new buyer is willing to pay. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, they're underwater for sure. And those, I don't know the percentage of the current real estate market to know exactly how much is that dominating or not. I'm not entirely sure. But there's certainly a percentage of short sales going on right now. There are pockets of the state where home values didn't decline as great as other pockets. So it just depends on where you live to know, you know, how much did your appraised value of your home change. But, you know, when you look really at short sales, which is obviously where you'd be seeing it most significantly when someone's trying to sell their home, there's definitely still a healthy number of short sales occurring right now.
Is a short sale a upside thing for the bank from the perspective that they can clear something that they're now carrying at a loss and at least they're getting something? Or is a short sale pure and simple evil for your members?
No, it's a prudent way to manage what, you know, is probably a not so great loan at that point in time. You know, the person who's in the house can't afford to stay in the house for whatever reason, and so it needs to be sold. So we want to recoup as much of that value as we can. And so, yes, something is always better than nothing, but, you know, people who might think they can get, you know, 10 cents on the dollar for the home, yeah, that's not realistic, of course. We're not going to sell a home way less than what we think we right. could really recoup for it from the market.
Did I read in the New York Times that 10 years from now, banks like your members are going to have a lot more homes that people have walked away from?
I haven't read that article. I think Wisconsin needs to be differentiated from the rest of the country when you look at some of the unique things that are happening. You do hear a lot in national media about people that just walk away from their home. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think that has happened here in this state to any, certainly not to any mentionable extent.
Okay.
Maybe one or two, I just don't know. I'm not aware that that's going on.
Which is a good thing that it's not going on, right?
Well, exactly. It is a good thing. But, you know, again, I go back to just not only the fairly stable economy we've had here, but bankers are generally conservative in this state in the kind of lending we've done. And really the citizens of this state are generally conservative in nature. So, you know, again, I think you're not going to see the extremes that you do see in the coastal areas. 10 years from now, it's certainly hard to predict what life will be like, but I'd be a little surprised if any bank in the country in 10 years, that's a pretty long time, is holding that much real estate.
How concerned are your members about hackers? You read a lot about, are hackers targeting the largest banks, but is hacking a very real worry for your members?
Well, without question, we spend a lot of money on IT security. And, you know, that's been the case for ever since technology changed and, you know, allowed more to be done online and through servers and virtualization and all of that. So we have always been entrusted with the public's confidence, both with their money and with their information. And we have always protected that, and we will spend what we need to spend to keep that as protected as we certainly can.
The Obama administration passed this package whereby lenders had to work with distressed homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been a failure?
You know, nationally, the home mortgage modification program
yes.
has not worked out well.
Okay.
And
why?
I think some of that is due to how the program was set up from the beginning. There were extended trial periods that people had to go through before you could even be eligible to be in the program. There are certain parameters that you had to have in terms of debt-to-income ratios and things. And, you know, honestly, if you're unemployed and you have zero income, you can't meet a lot of that, those criteria. So It's very challenging to have created that massive of a program to think that it was going to solve every problem when it just simply doesn't. If you don't have any income to repay it at all, there is little that anybody can really do at that point, unless it's going to be a 100% government subsidized home, and that's really not what that program was, of course, setting out to do. Again, banks in this state, when you look at the community banks, we have very low foreclosure rates. We are working with our borrowers. Again, we don't have the extreme number of problem borrowers as compared to the coast, but they certainly do exist without question. And we're trying to do what we can to keep them in their homes as long as we can.
Headline in last Saturday's Wall Street Journal, credit unions still outdo their bank counterparts. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Well, of course, I don't believe so, no. I think credit unions, certainly those that serve their mission and the low to moderate income markets that they were intended to serve, do a great job. But that certainly doesn't mean banks don't also do a great job. I think we do an outstanding job in serving our customers and the public. We give the same great rates as credit unions do, and I think we're the best place for their business.
There's a provision in the budget bill that has to do with banks more easily becoming credit unions?
A credit union.
Or do I have that reversed?
Becoming banks, yes.
Credit unions reversed. Becoming banks. Sorry,
right.
I had it reversed.
Yeah.
Why is that a good change?
Several reasons. You know, that's been getting a lot of unnecessary attention, in my opinion, really. It's a fiscal item where credit union, which currently does not pay income taxes, if they choose and if their members choose, this is entirely voluntary, we've created a more streamlined path to allow them to become a tax-paying bank.
Okay.
So there's a fiscal item in that regard. Certainly most credit unions probably will not find this interesting to them, but from our perspective, it's a way to make a path easier for those who do want to convert. We saw one convert many years ago from a state-chartered credit union. They were forced to convert to a federally chartered credit union and then convert to a federally chartered bank, and we'd rather keep banks chartered under our dual banking system, under DFI's regulation. So if a state chartered credit union becomes a state chartered bank, we think that's a win for the state, not only from tax revenue, but also the regulatory side. We're not going to lose that revenue either. They remain under the purview of the Department of Financial Institutions.
I'm based in the Capitol, and last week I watched protesters stop outside the M&I Bank on the square.
Mm-hmm.
How fair is it to blame a specific bank for who may or may not have given to a political candidate in the last cycle?
Well, I don't think that's fair at all, but I don't think they care. They're not too motivated by that concept. Certainly, we believe M&I has been very unfairly targeted. When you look back into the budget bill as it was presented back in February, the banking industry had nothing of interest to us in that budget bill, so we really were never part of the debate, but we got dragged into the political side mm-hmm. by some of those individuals. And, you know, I believe that the freedom of speech exists, so they certainly can say what they'd like to say, but on the same side of that coin, I believe everyone has the right to politically support whomever they choose. So I'm sure you can find employees at M&I who supported both parties, the Democrat and the Republican side. So to unfairly pick out selected individuals for their personal contributions to a candidate that they perhaps more align with or are more comfortable with, whatever their motivation was, I think is unfair.
Was it a loss to the banking industry in Wisconsin when M&I was sold?
You know, M&I was the state's largest bank. Associated Bank will become the state's largest bank at that time. But Harris has been a very strong financial institution in this state prior to their acquisition of M&I, and a good partner for the state to have, and I think that will continue in the future. We certainly are having extensive discussions from a trade association perspective with their key people. They're very good employees and very well-intentioned. They want to be in the state and be a strong community supporter.
Do you look for other M&As in your industry in Wisconsin?
I think over time, you know, certainly, again, nothing immediate, but I think over the next several years you will start to see more merger activity occur. Certainly, you know, the regulatory costs are getting overwhelming for some very small institutions to be able to bear. And just the general environment, high capital levels, you know, maybe closely held family banks where there's no subsequent generation who's interested in running it. You know, there could be a wide variety of reasons, but we do expect to see merger and acquisition activity
major,
pick up.
Major statewide trade groups like UHED are active politically in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. The realtors are very active, WMC very active. How politically active is the WBA?
Oh, I think we're very active. We have the largest conduit in the state. We certainly log lots of lobbying hours when you compare ourselves to our peers. We're perhaps not the size of WRA and WMC in terms of public visibility, but we're definitely very active. And you know, we look to support those individuals that support our interests. We try not to align strongly with any one party.
Have you endorsed both D's and R's in the past?
We have.
Mm-hmm. You have.
Well, I should say contributions from people that use our conduit have personally gone to those folks, and we do have a PAC as well, and we have money that you can check and see has gone to both sides. We don't, as a trade association, we don't really endorse through our board any specific candidates.
Well, how do you and the board feel about the governor's budget? I mean, he says we have to fix the deficit. Is his budget generally good for the state's economy?
Mm-hmm. There's definitely no question we have to fix where we've been. And you can go back over several administrations and see the problem building. And so we strongly support what he's trying to do in terms of getting the economy righted, fixing the budget deficit, without question, we're in support of.
Then maybe the last question, what's going to be your greatest challenge here as you look out over the next few years on looking out for the interests of your members?
Mm-hmm. Really, our biggest challenge is to keep supporting them, keep helping them with their regulatory burden and pressure, so that they can get back to the business that they're in, which is making loans and helping out their local community citizens, rather than spending so much time on paperwork and regulatory burden.
Well, congratulations on your new position.
Thank you
so much for talking about it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.